the same time, he won't give in return what the Palestinian resistance wants. In this case, it's three cases, three issues. First of all, the total withdrawal from of the Israeli army from Gaza, a ceasefire. Not a ceasefire, and end the war in Gaza, and to have guarantees that Israel is not going back to war after 60 days. And the third thing is about the humanitarian aid, which is supposed to be free from the Israeli hands, if you like, and the American companies, and to be returned back to the international organizations. These are the three issues that the Palestinian resistance insist on, while in Israel they are still talking about these three issues as an impossible to achieve.
And Mr. Qumsi, let's ask why Hamas wants the distribution of aid taken out of the hands of the U.S. and the Israelis. UNICEF, the World WHO, the World Health Organization, the World Food Program, the WFP, UNRWA, these are UN agencies with the infrastructure and the expertise to facilitate aid distribution in Gaza, more than any of them, UNRWA. Now, you're taking it out of the hands of these experts, you put it into the hands of U.S. contractors, as Tel Aviv and Washington have contractors many people refer to as mercenaries. As a result, over 800 starving Palestinian aid seekers have been killed by Israeli forces at these so-called aid distribution centers. We have even UN rights experts calling these aid sites death traps.
Indeed, these are death traps, and this is described not just by the United Nations, but also by Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch and others who, you know, in the international human rights organizations that looked at this situation. This is unacceptable. It's unacceptable to international aid agencies, unacceptable to the UN and to all decent human beings who looked at this. They realize this is a scam. This is not an aid. It's a scam to basically lure Palestinians and then kill them while claiming they are allowing aid so that they get off the docket of the International Criminal Court or the International Court of Justice. That is just a scam, no more and no less. And it's an Israeli-American scam, not just an Israeli scam. In fact, there is American mercenaries who are manning these, and many of them are shooting Palestinians waiting for aid. You know, deciding, Palestinians have to decide, I die either by hunger or I die by bullets. Which one do I want to take my chances with? So I think that's a horrific choice to make. And it is basically what is being offered us as Palestinians. Israel is moving along, as I said, with its plan, and because of the Epstein files and all of this, they know that they have the U.S. administration's subsequent ones, whether it's Clinton or Trump, under their thumb, because the Mossad can blackmail them and release any of the tapes that Epstein and others have recorded on them. So they feel very comfortable that the U.S. will stand with them on all steps and all processes of ethnic cleansing and continuing genocide.
And thank you, Mr. Qumsi. And Professor Nimmer, can you please also weigh in on these so-called death traps, these so-called aid distribution centers? Why take them out of the hands of these UN agencies, these experts that have been doing this for dozens of years? What objectives does this fulfill for the U.S. and the Zionists? And why do we have to witness 800 people, starving, hungry people that want to feed their families, get killed, seeking aid in Gaza?
Yes, from the very beginning, they wanted this method of distributing the humanitarian aid is to be in their hands in order to control the people in Gaza. It's quite clear, they said that many times, that we need to have the ID cards of all those who are coming into the areas designed to distribute the aid, and we will consider who's going in or who's going out. It's a mean of control. People are in starving, people are in hunger, and yet at the same time, the Israeli are deciding who's going to take this kind of food in order to control. They claim that they don't want this distribution of aid, humanitarian aid, to go in the hands of the Palestinian resistance, but this is not true. It's the whole thing is to control the Palestinians, and now it's, it became quite you know, obvious after they declared their plan of keeping the crossing of Morag and in south of Gaza till Philadelphia, which is include Rafah. This area, they want to keep it, and they don't want to redeploy or to withdraw from this area in order to create what they call it, the humanitarian city. So they will let people in, around 600,000 in the first stage, and they will distribute food on them. They will allow them in by their ID cards, and once they are in, they can't get out. So it is a concentration camp, and after that, we never know. It's part of a plan to ethnically cleanse this area, and to, according to the Israelis, they said there is a third country who's willing to take the Palestinians. So they will push Palestinians out of this area directly to this third country. And in this case, they are disposing of one third of the population in Gaza. And then they will repeat the same thing again in order to bring, and because of that, they need to control the food. They need to control the real life of the Palestinians in terms of the humanitarian aid, in order to control them to do so and to go to this humanitarian city, as they call it. So it's part of the plan for you know, the ethnically cleansing of Palestinians, and because of that, they are making that, you know, very important. Otherwise, if the Palestinian have their aid coming from international organizations, which they have no conditions at all against the Palestinians, and they can, you know, have it free and directly and distributed in all over Gaza Strip, it means there is no control for Israel over the Palestinian, using the weapon of hunger and weapon of starvation against the Palestinians.
And Mr. Kumsia, you notice every single day 80 to 100 Palestinians are being slaughtered in Gaza lately. You saw the coffee shop earlier this week, the clinic strewn with children's bodies after Israel's airstrike there, the gas station. Right now, I mean, and just earlier today, here's another headline. Israeli drone kills at least 12 people in Gaza City's food market attack, including a top surgeon. Why is it every time we witness an opportunity for a ceasefire to somewhat materialize, it's accompanied by a dramatic increase in the level of barbarism by the occupation?
Well, clearly the Israeli regime is very interested in maximizing number of people killed and number of people injured. We have to remember, for each 100 Palestinian killed daily, there's at least 300 to 400 Palestinians who are injured, most of them with injuries that are debilitating, like losing limbs. And now Gaza has the highest child amputee rate in the world, number of children amputees in the world. This horrific situation that Israel is engaged in, including using banned weapons and using new weapons that they test. That's the Gaza laboratory. They test weapons on the Gaza population. The idea is extermination. That's all it is. And the world community needs to be ashamed of itself, sitting around watching these governments, like the Western governments, who spout sometimes words about local suffering, when they really understand that what's going on has not been done even in the past 100 years before, including in the Second World War. There was never a genocide at this scale, using starvation and thirst and denial of medicines to people. obliterating all the healthcare facilities so that they cannot even treat the injured people and they have to do amputations without anesthesia. This is the horror of what we are witnessing. And my friends in Gaza who lost relatives, one of them, Sakhir, lost both his parents and his brothers, and they are literally, the rest of them, the survivors, are literally starving and so weak they cannot take the risk to go to the so-called aid distribution death traps. He told me that I would go because I'm willing to die, because death may be more merciful than hunger. This is the reality that's happening as we speak in Gaza, day in and day out. This is day 645 of this accelerating genocide.
Thank you, Mr. Kumsiye. And Professor Nimr, and you notice the only people fighting for the women and children of Gaza are Palestinian resistance. I mean, with the escalation of violence by the occupation throughout the last few days and weeks, we've seen retaliatory operations also increase by the resistance, leading to some serious losses for invading Israeli forces. The fact that Hamas is still in a position to say no to an unjust and unfair ceasefire deal that will not benefit Palestinians and still carry out a strong response to this escalation and this violence, what does that say about the resistance today in Gaza?
I think this is the most important issue, and that is the issue which is going really to force Israel to stop the war for many reasons. First of all, there were some studies about, you know, the conduct of the Palestinian resistance since the resuming of the war against Gaza. And they said in the first month, at least, you know, there was, you know, like every week one operation, sometimes, you know, more than even 10 days to have an operation against the Israeli troops. But now we are talking exactly since June and July, that there is an escalation in the situation. This escalation caused, you know, lots of damage to the Israeli army. That proven that now the numbers is talking about itself, that the Palestinian resistance now is doing three or four sometimes big operations, I mean, in Gaza a week, and sometimes more than that, and sometimes also two or three in a day. And that inflicts lots of casualties among the Israeli army. We are talking about, you know, in June alone, there were 20 soldiers were killed. July, we are talking till today, more than 12 soldiers were killed, and we are at the beginning of July. So with this rate, it's really, really very hard for the Israeli army. The Channel 12, which is known in Israel as a Abru government and Abru Netanyahu and the right wing, they conducted a kind of a survey among Israeli soldiers in the army. And they talk about, you know, lots of problems, and they are tired, fatigued, and that they can't do the job. And also the upper groups of the army, they said that they are assigning, you know, to us some assignments which is really not for our expertise. So it means that they don't have new targets apart from killing the civilian. And the Israeli army is really now facing lots of problems, including the lack of lots of soldiers to be in the army as well. And especially that this report, in spite of the fact that the Israeli army officially, they said we have 10,000 casualties among the Israeli army. The report said in this Channel 12 that there is 20,000 casualties among the Israeli army, that they lost them and now they can't go back to fight. In addition to that, not recruiting the Haredim in the army, that make the army really in a very, very bad situation, and we can see that quite clear.
And I'd like Mr. Kumsiye, if you could please weigh in on that question as well. We see so many Israelis even asking for an end to the genocide. They want to see their captives back. They want to see an end to this thing, not because they care so much for Palestinian lives, because they care about becoming more of a pariah and isolated in the international community. So they want Benjamin Netanyahu to wrap this thing up in Gaza. You have Israel's closest allies asking for a ceasefire, permanent ceasefire, bring the onslaught to an end in Gaza. But Zionist leadership do not listen, which brings us to the point, we hear it often, that Israel only understands the language of force. How basically significant do you see Hamas's role along with Islamic Jihad and what they're doing today for Palestinians in Gaza?
Well, clearly, if we are looking at Israeli public opinion, there's still 82% of Israelis support the ethnic cleansing of Gaza. Mm. And the vast majority of Israelis still support the genocide in Gaza. They may differ on the tactics. So the opposition, for example, to Netanyahu, thinks that the tactic should be a withdrawal from Gaza interim, and then we can always go back into Gaza. This is what they argue. So it's a differences on the tactics, not on the goals, which continues to be to obliterate the Palestinian people and any semblance of resistance within the Palestinian people. However, what has happened since October 2023, really, is that the idea that Israel can proceed as it wants with ethnic cleansing that started in 1948 and continued for some 78 years now, and can continue with this with impunity, has reached an end point, because clearly this idea that we are an invincible army and nobody dares attack us was shattered on October 7, 2023. And then it continues to be shattered, because here we are bombarding Gaza, as I said, leveling Gaza for 645 days, and they still have losses. Israeli soldiers are being killed. This shows the futility of crushing a resistance. You cannot crush a resistance. That doesn't happen historically. I'm a historian also, and I know that historically it never happened in the past that you would completely crush a resistance of an indigenous people who are fighting against a colonial racist power, whether it was in South America, South Africa, or Vietnam, or any other country, Algeria. Okay. This doesn't happen. So that's what I think is a lesson being learned. And I hope it trickles to the Israeli public and the Israeli leadership.
Thank you.
That they cannot win against the Palestinians by military might.
Thank you both for joining us on the program. Time has gotten the better of us. Appreciate having you both on. Mr. Mazin Kumsieh joining us from Occupied Bethlehem, and Professor Saad Nimr, they're joining us from Occupied Ramallah. And this brings us to the conclusion of this segment of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Searching for the light, and you see no hope in sight. Be sure and have no doubt, He is always close to you. He's the one who knows you best, He knows what's in your heart. You'll find your peace at last if you just have faith in Him. You're always in my heart and mind, Your name is mentioned every day. You no matter what, my biggest wish is to see you one day. 'Cause I believe
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You are listening to the program Bridge on Iran Radio with Sheikh Mahdi, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Wa salatu wa salam ala ashraf al-anbiya'i wal-mursaleen. حبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين. Respected brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum, inshallah. Wherever you are in the world and you're hearing us, you're being with us in this program, inshallah you're finding this program in the best state of health and faith. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, in fact, is teaching us life lessons to be able to improve the quality of our faith, which eventually causes the quality of our life to be improved. And in the hereafter, we become prosperous. And a big and essential portion of success in this dunya and in the hereafter is to be able to care for our surroundings. As Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, in the 17th dua of Sahifa Sajjadiyya, where Imam Sajjad is teaching us to seek refuge from shaitan to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and from his instigations and his trickery and his traps, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam also teaches us in this 14th phrase of the dua that Allahumma ja'alna fi nazma a'da'ih, O Allah, place us in the ranks of his enemies. And wa'azilna an idade awliya'ih, and remove us from the number of his friends. La muti'u lahu idha istahwana, that we obey him not, that we stop obeying him when he makes temptations to us, when he entices us. And wala nastajibu lahu idha da'ana, and we do not answer him when he calls to us. Let's take a break to come back to the good part.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds.
A bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifa As-Sajjadiyyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Respected brothers and sisters, again, we are together for spending the next few minutes on the book Sahifa Sajjadiyya, where Imam Sajjad alayhi salam is teaching us and coaching us, in fact, to be able to confront with shaitan with the lessons that he teaches us in the language of supplication. He says, نَأْمُرُ بِمُنَاوَاتِهِ مَنْ أَطَاءَ أَمْرَنَا, so that we command everyone who obeys our command to be his enemy, right? Not only you become the enemy of shaitan, not only you stop siding with shaitan, but whoever that obeys you. And here, whoever obeys you, meaning that whoever listens to you, not necessarily someone who is inferior to you. Yes, I am head of an office. I am a doctor. I have people who are working under my position, right? I am an imam, a leader of a society, a congregation, you name it, right? But that's not necessarily the case. Sometimes the people who are above you, but they're still listening to you. They're caring about what you say. You're having influences on them. نَأْمُرُ بِمُنَاوَاتِهِ من اطاع امرنا. And here it says those stop this mood, this mentality that says, invites you, hey, why do you care about others? This is not your business. Leave your life, right? Leave everything that you have and live your life. Don't care about anyone. Don't care about your surroundings. That's not the case. If you're living in a nice neighborhood and stop caring about your lawn mowing, what do the other neighbors would tell you? They start knocking on your door and say, hey, stop doing this. You know, you're making this neighborhood to look ugly. Start taking care of your house, right? Everything is looking bad. Same here applies to the ideology that if you're trying to be the enemy of Shaitan, not only yourself, but also the people who are around you, and they listen to you. You know, one of the conditions that Amr bil Ma'ruf, commanding for good, becomes wajib is when you have a high percentage of hope. There's a high probability that whatever you say to them, to be inviting them to good, is going to be accepted by them, right? It's going to come into effect. If you do not give such probability, if you do not have any hope that they will not listen to you, if someone is removing their scarf, they don't care about hijab anymore. And even if you tell them that, please, you know, observe Islamic hijab, they wouldn't be caring. Then that's not your responsibility. Let's take a quick break here. Stay tuned with us.
You are listening to the program Bridge on Iran Radio.
All right, respected brothers and sisters, in this last portion, what I want to emphasize on is that we are living in a society. That living in a society requires or brings for us a responsibility to care about our surroundings, because we are all living together. If someone brings a hazardous material into the neighborhood, for example, if someone is suffering from a certain virus or certain infection, right, he's going to pass it on to others. You're not going to be like, this is your own business. During COVID, you don't tell people, hey, you know, if you're not wearing your mask, it's okay. You require them to wear masks. You start enforcing vaccination and so on and so forth. Because you're like, if you're sick, I'll get sick too. وَنَأْمُرُ بِمُنَاوَاتِهِ مَنْ أَطَاءَ أَمْرَنَا. We command everyone who obeys our command to be his enemy. The people who are listening to us, hey, know that. Stay alert. You are siding with Shaitan once you're doing this. وَنَعِذُ عَنْ مُطَابَعَتِهِ مَنِ اتَّبَعَ زَجْرَنَا. And we admonish everyone who follows our prohibition not to follow him. Whoever accepts our wa'd, accepts our words, accepts and follows us to not follow Shaitan, to stop following Shaitan. And that is the part that is very important. So in this last portion, what I want to emphasize on is that caring for others and caring for our surroundings, especially when it comes to reminding everyone that following Shaitan is something that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wanted us not to do and wanted us to stay away from, is of high importance. Inshallah, we get success in doing that. And as we said, the preliminary step for reaching such level is to be able to start within ourselves, not to side with Shaitan, and to stay alert to be able to remain in the side and party of his enemies, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program Bridge on Iran Radio with Sheikh Mahdi, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast round the clock for listeners across the globe. The English channel of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting can be heard via shortwave, internet, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,710 kilohertz every day on 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in the Southern Africa can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 11,740 kilohertz every day on 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Iran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. You can also listen to the radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means.
Thank you.
When you travel to a historical city, the goal is not just to visit museums and beautiful monuments, but you want to mix with the locals and learn about their traditions and culture. In recent years, many historical houses in Iran have turned to accommodation places, which are called Bumgardi. These are neither hotels nor hostels. They are local traditional houses that provide the opportunity for their guests to meet with locals and live like locals, even for a short time. Narteti is the first house we visited, a beautiful place in the small town of Taft, with several traditional elements. An Iranian Zoroastrian couple owns the house. Traveling also means doing activities that we would not have done elsewhere. Each night, all the travelers who stay in this cozy place meet with the owners of the house, drink tea, and eat freshly picked pomegranate from the backyard. And so, they can experience a little different trip and realize that we all share the same fundamental values and same objectives. We're all part of the same planet, and this makes us stay connected.
Staying at these kinds of places adds to one's understanding of the world and understanding of people. It is something which gives you an understanding that all of us are the same. We're all people. We're much more similar than we are different. And when you start taking governments and other things out of the situation, it's just, we can enjoy being with each other and understanding each other and learning about each other.
Another differentiating element of the house is a wall full of memories of those who stayed a while in this place. A very interesting wall that takes you to a journey around the world.
Une nuit dans cette maison est particulièrement est une expérience particulièrement enrichissante puisque ça permet de partager ces expériences entre les différents voyageurs qui se croisent ici.
In Iran, when a guest or loved one leaves our house, we accompany him or her to the door and throw water to show we want him or her to return very soon. With this compassion, we left that beautiful place to discover other local guest houses. The second place is the House of Baran, which means rain in Farsi, a beautiful adobe house that truly represents the city of Yazd. A very simple house, but artistically decorated and perfectly designed with traditional Persian elements that constantly reminds you of the peaceful spirit of Iranians. A beautiful house with very positive energy. There's a logic behind the location of every piece in decorating this guest house. Some of these elements are symbolic and some others are still functional.
The house has lots of interesting features for me as a visitor. So Abbas, the owner of this guest house, had to adjust the stairs and make them more comfortable for us, people of modern age, to be able to walk down. Because apparently, back in the old days, they were building these stairs very high. The underground room, and there is about 15 to 20 degrees Celsius temperature difference, comparing it to upstairs. So making it a perfect room to chill and maybe take a nap during the hot days of summer. Also during the cold days of winter, this is gonna be a very warm room and area of the building. Few steps down and tiny little room even gets cooler. Ideal, perfect place to keep your fruits and vegetables during the hot days of summer. Natural cooling system. You know why? Because it's connected to the wind tower room. There is always a time to say goodbye to even the most beautiful things in this world. What you take from that location or moment is usually what you see or experience towards the end. An unforgettable taste with a beautiful color and very exciting recipe create an experience that I will take with me from Baran Guest House. The exciting thing about all these traditional guest houses is the fact that they're all different in some ways. One is famous for its traditional elements. One is known for its design and decorations. And the other has some very moving stories about the people who live there, the people who run it now, their families and their relatives. Local people of different regions of Iran, full of love and passion,
the most hospitable hosts that I have ever seen in my life. Jahangir Guest House is one of the few places that you can have a unique experience of meeting local elders, hear their stories, and learn about their experiences.
One of the benefits of staying at local guest houses is to have a chance to have this first-hand experience of seeing local handicrafts being made. You see the whole process, and you have a chance to see the craftsman who's behind this precious product, behind making this precious product. And I really enjoy interacting with people, talking to them, and of course learning from them.
One thing is to hear or imagine how life was back in the old days, especially inside these gorgeous traditional guest houses. Another thing is to live the life of those people and those days. It might be some very simple acts or even sometimes symbolic, but they definitely worth the try. It feels amazing. Shahryar Azimi for Iran.
صلي على المصطفى الهادي المجتبى والآل الكرام الله الله يا الله 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 يا الله صلي على المصطفى الهادي المجتبى والآل الكرام
Don't you worry, follow the sign Leave the story to the divine Free yourself and say what's true. Be yourself though you may be few.
Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi, al-Mujtaba, wal-Ali al-Kiram. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi, al-Mujtaba, wal-Ali al-Kiram.
You can see straight into my soul. You know in hardship I changed my goals. Now I realize I was so unwise. Abandoned your advice.
Faced with your pride.
Help was always near if we persevered.
If we held up
just for a while.
Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Salli ala al-Mustafa. Al-Hadi al-Mujtaba.
Without you, nothing I've gained is without you. If you are pleased, my soul can breathe. Where would I be without you? My heart now flees these worldly dreams, yearning for mercy from you. Now I realize I was so unwise. Abandoned your advice,
faced with your pride.
Help was always near if we persevered.
If we held up
just for a while.
Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Salli ala al-Mustafa, al-Hadi, al-Mujtaba, wal-Ali al-Kiram. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Allah, Allah, ya Allah. Salli ala al-Mustafa. الهادي المجتبى والآل الكرام الله الله يا الله 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 يا الله صلي على المصطفى الهادي المجتبى
Good afternoon to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio broadcast from Tehran. Today is Tuesday, 15th of July, 2025, corresponding to 24th of Tir 1404 on the Iranian solar calendar and 19th of Muharram 1447 on the Islamic lunar Hijri calendar. We start off this hour's programs with A to Z of Life. This program presents an Islamic Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran, as well as inspirational poetry and stories. Next up will be our radio productions feature. They will be followed by The Key. The program presents short answers to doubts and ambiguities raised about various Islamic and Shiite topics. Stay with us for this hour.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Eyes Open to the Needy. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on I'm Being Afraid with me, Sister Zainab. And what do I mean by this? Eyes open to the needy. So this is a sort of attitude that means we are sort of, in a sense, almost scanning what's going on around us. And, you know, it's actually probably quite a safe way to go about our business outside anyway. Because if we're totally lost in sort of reflection or daydreaming, when we're walking around, you know, to be honest, we might just end up tripping over stuff or bumping into people and not being aware that we've stepped out on the road in front of a car. So obviously, always scanning and being a little bit observant and aware of our surroundings is the safest thing anyway. But eyes open to the needy, obviously, this goes beyond this. This is just of always being like having this awareness of, you know, what are people doing? What are there any problems out there? Are there people who need help? What's going on? So observing the good and the bad, in a sense, too. But I'll just explain this a bit better, maybe with an example from a little anecdote from life of one of the martyrs from Holy Defense, by the name of Hussein Shayestefar. So he, for example, was apparently very observant of everything around him. So to such an extent that one evening he and his wife were taking a taxi in Tehran and the car had stopped in heavy traffic and he suddenly got out of the car. And so he got out and ran over to the other side of the road and gave some money to a poor person who'd been sitting there by the side of the road. And yeah, obviously this is a particular way of looking at the world. So obviously he... And there's two different aspects in here that I'm going to actually talk about. Welcome back to A2Z here on I'm Being Just Radio, me sister Zainab. And so I'm talking obviously about, I'm talking about helping, but I'm talking about something that goes almost over and beyond that. Talking about an attitude that means that we really are aware of other people's needs. And obviously in Islam, we're told it's actually better to be aware, to sort of be preemptive to people's needs, rather than waiting for them to come and ask us. Obviously, for sure, if someone comes and asks us for help and we are able to help them, then yes, of course, we do that. But if we can even get to the stage where we see or hear that a person has needs and then sort of try and resolve those needs, meet those needs without them even approaching us or even, you know, having to lose some of their pride in asking for help, that in a sense is the ideal. And obviously this particular little story where the martyr Hussein Shayestefar sees the poor person and immediately, so, you know, gets out of the car and goes over and gives that person some money. This obviously means, what it means for that poor person is that poor person doesn't have to sit there and sort of hold their hand out to someone and beg, which obviously is a difficult thing for a person's pride and dignity. But obviously, for sure, that person had needs, and by just sort of giving that person money, Hossein Sheikh Mustafa was able to meet those needs, in a sense, maintaining the dignity of that person. And, you know, this is something that, you know, we can do in our daily lives. So we might be aware of people who, you know, are poor, who may be doing very lowly paid jobs, difficult jobs, sitting on the footpath and mending people's shoes, polishing people's shoes. And they don't ask for money. Obviously, they can make some money, but for sure they would not be making a lot of money. And it doesn't take much to just, you know, obviously notice and maybe give some extra money so we can try and raise and help raise these people up out of your poverty and also just sort of meet their needs without their dignity being taken away. So inshallah, these are just some reminders for all of us and what we can do in our daily lives. And I look forward to welcoming you back to another episode of A to Z here on Iron Bingish Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Every day I'll try to be as true as I can to you, 'cause Israeli fighter jets carried out a strike on a group of civilians. Three people have been killed, several others were injured. And among those killed is a five-year-old child. His name is Mahmoud Shukri.
I am Abu Bakr Abed, a 22-year-old journalist who was forced to become a war correspondent. I was a football commentator and reporter. And that's what I'm going to resume, inshallah, after this war. I do remember that I never used the words kill, bomb, bombard, injure, wound, or any, you know, sort of these vocabularies at all. I've always loved watching football games, listening to the interviews of players, coaches, managers, directors, and everyone. And even the fans, like, every word from them really meant to me. That's why, in fact, that's why I learned English. I learned English through football.
Al-Hilal are trying to find an equalizer. Saud has the ball, switches the play to Abdelhamid on the right-hand side.